is built from the back, so you must think it's church. But we're not going to start 10 minutes late just because you think it's church. So, I'm going to talk a little about interstate water agreements, specifically towards the end about what we're doing in Snake Valley. I want to start with a couple of concepts, because understanding the concept is important to understand what's happening in Snake Valley. I used some very high-powered visual tools from my own backyard to develop this. So, this is the mythical concept of what a groundwater aquifer is, that there's this water sitting there. It didn't come from anywhere, and it isn't going anywhere. Everybody would like to have one of those and then say, we're going to drill our well in it, and it won't impair anybody, and life will be good. Based on the statute that we got a couple of years ago, if that in fact really is the case, we probably can't appropriate any water from it because it isn't a renewable supply. But in reality, I don't think there are any of those in the state. So this is more like what the situation really is that you have water coming into a basin and you have water going out of a basin. And when we appropriate water, what we do is take water from the natural discharge and reappropriate it to some use that we decide is more beneficial. And so anytime you do that, whether you want to recognize it or not, there are impacts to the system as you appropriate water. Typically, when we do a hydrology study, it's difficult. You can try to guess what the recharge is to the system, but the real test of what the recharge is what the discharge is, since what goes in must go out, or somebody down deep is using a lot of water. Okay? So that, in reality, that's how most hydrology studies are done, is they try to guess what the recharge is, but they also look at the discharges, and that balance of those two things is what the aquifer has available to use. And because we live in Utah, people always want to think that we can appropriate the average amount of water that occurs every year. And what we need to remember is, in Utah, average is a statistic, probably never happens. We have a lot of water some years, a little more, a little less, a lot. And if you average all those, that is the average yield of the supply. And that is one of the functions of aquifer storage, is that the level of the aquifer may vary from year to year if you take the same amount out of it every year, because the inflow to it isn't constant. But it will recover back to an average level, and that's where we get ideas of sustainable yield. Now, this is the situation we have in Snake Valley. The water comes in, most of it in Nevada. The water is discharging mostly in Utah. And the question is, whose water is it? It's not as clear-cut as you might think, okay? Or if you live here, you're sure it's yours. If you live here, it's sure you're sure it's yours. But that's the issue we're dealing with. And as you understand, the only difference between that model and a real groundwater system is that you have soil or rock with fractures in it in the middle, and the water is actually moving through pores in the fractures that create resistance as the water flows through it that gives the groundwater aquifer a gradient. So when we look at an aquifer system, then the components that make up the recharge are precipitation and then runoff that might go into the aquifer after it comes off the mountains, and return flow from irrigation. And the components of discharge are evapotranspiration from the natural plants, outflow from springs that may leave the aquifer, underflow that may leave the basin, and wells that pump water out and take it away from the basin. One of the big questions that we're still struggling with in Utah, and plays into working with groundwater systems, is how much drawdown is reasonable as we develop the aquifer. As I talked at the beginning, what you're doing is trading natural discharges for discharges you want. And as you do that, it's going to change the configuration of the groundwater system and the gradients in the system. And the question becomes, how much can that gradient change before it becomes unreasonable for people to use the water? And particularly in systems where you may have people who have been used to having springs or artesian wells, and then other people come in and drill a well and the artesian pressure goes away, when does that become unreasonable versus when are we making the best use of the water is a difficult question, and it's one we're still struggling with. And it's one that comes into play in Snake Valley, because as we develop more of that water, the water levels will go down and we have an agricultural economy that's competing with the municipal economy. And obviously, their economics aren't the same. And one's going to drive the other one out of business if there isn't some decision on reasonable. This is a definition of safe yield that's currently in our statute. It means the amount of groundwater that can be withdrawn from a groundwater basin over a period of time without exceeding the long-term recharge of the basin or unreasonably affecting the basin's physical and chemical integrity. So it's a mouthful of words, but the concept is that we're trying to manage our basins on a sustainable basis. So we don't want to take more water out of the basins than will recharge them. We don't want to do other things that might injure the chemical quality of the water. There are actually a couple of areas that are of concern with other states with groundwater. One of them is the Curlew Valley on the north that we share with Idaho. It's currently showing some significant declines. The other one is Beaver Dam Wash in the southwestern corner of the state. There hasn't been a lot of development there yet. But all three states, Utah, Nevada, and Arizona, are competing for that water resource. And so that's going to be a hotbed as time goes on. It already is, but it's only going to get worse. And then the one we're working with right now is Snake Valley. The reason we're working with Snake Valley is Las Vegas has traditionally gotten their water supply from the Colorado River. And they're at a point in their growth where they're now using almost all of their entitlement from the Colorado River. In fact, they divert more than their entitlement, and they receive credits for return flows so that their depletion from the river is what they're approaching. And so you can talk about they ought to get low-flow nozzles for their showers or low-flow toilets, but it won't make any difference for Las Vegas because it's the depletion that's causing them the problem. And so they have a desire to continue to grow, and they put together a plan to go up into eastern Nevada and develop groundwater and bring it to Las Vegas. That's not really our problem. That's Nevada's problem. They're the ones that need to make that decision if that's the way they want to grow. The reason it becomes, this isn't going to show as well, the reason it becomes an issue to us is because one of the basins where they want to take water is Snake Valley, which is actually located in Utah and Nevada. None of the wells that they're proposing to use is in Utah, and we don't have any approval authority for their project. But it's a project that likely will impact Utah, and so we're trying to plan for what that might be and to mitigate what those consequences might be. It's a very ambitious project. I don't know what the latest cost estimate is, somewhere around $3 billion. but it's a large pipeline that goes up into central Nevada, and originally it was proposed to take about 200,000 acre feet out of the groundwater system there and take it down to southern Nevada. I think as the Nevada state engineer makes decisions on their various applications, the project will end up not being as big as they originally envisioned, but it will still be a very sizable project. Because so many people misunderstand what our negotiations are about, I put this slide in just so that people understand what we're not negotiating is the sale or conveyance of any of Utah's water to Nevada. We're not negotiating a way for Utah to approve Southern Nevada's project. We're not approving any Utah water rights or water to take to Nevada. We're not trading Snake Valley for another project somewhere else. And it's not a subversive effort by our government to undermine our citizens. Okay. There was some language included in what's called the Lincoln County Land Act, which was a bill that went through Congress in 2004 that did a lot of things for Nevada. But part of what was in that bill was this language that allowed the state of Utah and the state of Nevada to enter into agreement to divide the waters of any groundwater basins that are shared between the two states. And so that is the authorization that we're working with Nevada to try to enter into a groundwater agreement on Snake Valley. The important thing to recognize is that we're working not with Southern Nevada or Las Vegas, but with the state of Nevada. And the goal is to reach a division of the water resources. In other words, to go back to my big tub to decide which part of the tub is theirs and which part is ours. Okay? If we're supposed to look at the maximum sustainable beneficial use of the water resource and protect existing water rights. Seems easy enough. What we're looking for, and the reason we think the agreement is important to Utah, is because of the alternatives if we don't reach an agreement. The only alternative, if we don't reach an agreement, is for Nevada to go ahead and develop their project, and then at some point, if we can demonstrate injury in Utah, to try to sue them in the Supreme Court. Just what the outcome of that would be, and it would be a long time after any damage would ever occurred, are not good scenarios for Utah. And so there's a lot to be gained by trying to reach an upfront agreement and have an idea and understand what's going to happen going into it, rather than to wait and try to take a defensive posture. And so that's why we're working so hard to see if there isn't a way that we can reach agreement. I think there's some benefits to Nevada as well. Obviously, this takes a cloud off of their project from a financial standpoint if they don't have this issue with Utah looming out there, and so there's some incentive for them to reach agreement as well. Whether there's enough for both of us to work this out remains to be seen, but that's the thought process that's going on in trying to get there. We see it as an opportunity that rather than have the two states competing with each other in Snake Valley, it's an opportunity to work together and plan for the resource and make the best use of the resource rather than cause injury. We've looked at several elements. Because the bill's language doesn't talk about a specific place where we would enter into an agreement. It talks about basins that are shared between the two states. Then we've had some discussion about what the extent of an agreement might be, and at this point we've identified Snake Valley as a place where there definitely needs to be an agreement. Are there other places that might need one eventually, possibly? One of those might be on the other side of the Deep Creek Mountains. That remains to be seen based on how the development takes place. We initially talked about the next basin to the west from Snake Valley, which is called Spring Valley, which is located entirely in Nevada, because the studies that are available indicate that there may be some flow between that valley and Snake Valley. As we discussed that, we finally concluded that we didn't really want to go into Nevada and start telling Nevada how to regulate water resources entirely in their state, just as we wouldn't appreciate it if they did that to us. And so we agreed that we wouldn't go to Spring Valley. As the studies have gone on, people question whether that was a good decision or not, and I'll explain a little more about why that is in a minute. But I think it was an important decision, and I still think it was the right one, because I don't think we want to go where that we're going into another basin would have taken us. We've talked about defining water right protection, development in the states, and how to make a division, and to discuss and sustainability and sensitive species. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I'm sorry, these pictures are small enough. Probably not seeing very well. Let me try to help you. This is Snake Valley, is the area outlined by this blue line, and it actually includes Tooele County. This is the state line, this red line. So Tooele County is about right up in here. Juab, Millard, and Beaver County. So it's a big area of the state most of us have never seen. It's a very desolate part of the state. There isn't a paved, the only paved road in this whole area goes right through here. Well, I guess there's one that goes down this way. But this, you take dirt roads if you go anywhere up in here. And it's some fairly independent folks that live out there, and they choose to live there because they like the lifestyle. And they're very upset that anything should happen that might change their lifestyle. So that's one of the challenges in all this, is no matter what happens, they likely aren't going to be happy, because they're, unless Nevada just goes away, there probably isn't a scenario where nothing will change. In fact, they're causing change. So this part of the Lincoln County Land Act, in addition to the provision to allow us to enter into an agreement, included a provision that allowed a federal study to be conducted that's called Barkus Basin and Range Carbonate Aquifer System Study. The reason that study was commissioned is that this whole area where Southern Nevada wants to pump wells is part of a big regional system that's underlain by carbonate rocks, limestone rocks, through which it's postulated groundwater might move. And the top of the system is right in this area, some of the mountains which border Snake Valley and some just a little to the east. That's the highland in the system. And then water flows this direction, that direction, and that direction out of the system. And so if they're going to develop at the top of the system, there's potential for impacts in a bunch of directions. And so this study was commissioned and carried on by the USGS, started in 2005, and the report to Congress was just presented or published a few weeks ago. I use this figure that comes from that report. These colors in blue represent areas of significant recharge to the underlying rocks, the carbonate aquifer system. these colors, the yellows and reds and blacks, represent significant, I guess it's significant because it's such a big area, outflows, discharges to evapotranspiration. And so as I indicated earlier, this is Snake Valley. And you can see most of the recharge is in fact in Nevada, okay? And most of the discharge is in fact in Utah, okay? So that's the struggle. If you look, you can't see these numbers, but the estimate of the recharge to the system in Snake Valley is about 107,000 acre feet, somewhere around that, and the discharge is estimated to be about 132,000. You'll notice there's a little difference there between those two numbers. That goes to the other part of the study. This is just a cross section of what they think that system looks like from that study. That goes to the other part of the study. This again is Snake Valley, and these arrows represent flows from one basin to another that that the Barkus study is suggesting may be occurring. And so earlier studies didn't suggest as much water moving between the basins. This particular study suggests that the north end of the basin, we probably have as much as 15,000 acre feet going into Snake Valley from Spring Valley. And at the lower end of the basin, about 30,000. So it's a significant amount of water moving from Spring Valley, where they've already approved applications to pump down in this part of the valley. Now it appears that the effect could be significant on Snake Valley. You'll notice that there's also water moving from other valleys here. It's a quite a complex, interesting system. Not quite what it looks like on the surface. Okay. This is a diagram to just kind of give you an idea of the gradient through the of what is known in the carbonate aquifers. As I mentioned before, the high of the system is located over in this area, and the water's flowing both that way and this way out of Snake Valley. One of the issues that we're concerned about as this area develops, we have actually quite a bit of irrigation in Utah, or at least the majority of it, about 12,000 acres in Utah. But there are a number of fairly big springs in Utah, the biggest of which is Fish Springs, which is located just to the edge of the study area. The flow to those springs comes out of those carbonate rocks. And the water was actually appropriated by application in Utah back in the 40s. Somebody who wanted to grow muskrats. And so there's a certificated application there for at least 27,000 acre feet. We think those springs are flowing somewhere in the low 20s these days. The Fish and Wildlife Services has purchased those springs and operates a wildlife area there now. But they're very concerned about their springs. There's also a set of springs located at the south end of the valley that feed irrigation in this area, and that's where a large part of the proposed project's pumping is centered. And so it's pretty clear if that project's developed, there'll be some impact there. There's also some springs located towards the middle of the valley called Twin Springs that there's a little fish called the least chub that used to live around here but doesn't anymore. And the last big population is out in this area, and part of it's fed out of those springs. And so the sensitive species people are very concerned about those springs. And then there's some springs that flow from Nevada into Utah called Gandy Springs. that flow here. Almost certainly, if you develop enough groundwater, you're going to affect those springs. So that's one of the concerns as we try to find a way to solve the problem. As I indicated before, the recharge is about 70% in Nevada. The discharge is about 70% in Utah. The existing water rights are mostly in Utah, because that's where most of the discharge is. In the process we're working through, we've prepared and summarized the hydrologic studies that have been completed, and are trying to come to agreement on what the hydrology of the basin is, identify the existing uses and water rights. We went out and did a survey of our water rights. Nevada's done the same. And we're just struggling now with trying to find a methodology to divide the basin, which is an interesting process that we'll continue to work on. In the end, there's only so much water. So it's a difficult problem, but it's one that we all need to face and work through. So I think I'm about out of time, aren't I? Yeah. Questions? Let's see if there's anybody got any chat questions there. Too late. All right. There's no questions. I'll let Jerry go.
Why don't you stand up and stretch a minute while we change in the thing here.